Hello and welcome to a Shot in the Dark podcast. We have a special guest this week, a good friend of mine, Simon Whitnell. Hi, Simon.
Hey, Phil.
Or should I say Coach Whitnell?
I don't think so.
Simon and I have worked together for over 10 years now on different projects and different coaching projects. Simon is a rugby boy like myself, so we thought we'd start there, talk a little bit of rugby. Simon's from New Zealand, and New Zealand have just lost their winning run. So how do you feel about that, mate?
Oh, I thought it was good, actually. You always learn more from a loss when you're on a run like that, I'd imagine. Well, that's what they say.
What are you thinking about the press at the moment where they're calling you the
dirtiest team?
The dirtiest team in the world, is that?
I think we only had one person suspended, so I think having the dirtiest team when only one person got suspended is not that accurate.
So that's
they've got to sell papers, so they've got to talk about something.
So we're defining dirty by suspension.
Yeah,
like
we didn't lose that game, so you have to talk about something.
Yeah, so Simon and I have both grown up in the world of rugby on different sides of the world. And today's podcast is very much about coaching and coaching styles and coaching methodology in respect to giving athletes the opportunity to develop and flourish. Simon, you've played a lot of rugby. You were a back, so not so much contact, but lots of skill. And I was on the other side where I had lots of contact and not so much skill. So we have two sort of different areas there. And you grew up in New Zealand, and it's we've just been talking about it sort of off camera, off radio here, that we had very different sort of experiences of growing up in our sport.
I think what we were talking about in that aspect is when a new player comes into a team. In some rugby environments I've been in, as a new player coming in, you're sort of put a lot of pressures put on you by sort of senior players and by a culture within the team. And in some environments, there's no pressure on you, and you're the environment's created for you to flourish and express yourself. And we're just talking about traditionally with the All Blacks, for example, they create an environment where, as a new player coming in, they create an environment where it's really simple for them, and they just do what they've done before, and they're allowed to and encouraged to express themselves and to have a go, and almost have no fear when they come in, and then they learn to adapt and improve from that point onwards. And they're two very different environments that you go into. And there's a lot of those environments in both countries, that in England and New Zealand, where I've played rugby before. But there's a lot more opportunity to express yourself in those New Zealand teams. And I think that's why they have more attacking and more try-scoring.
That was the interesting thing. That was how the conversation, when we were sort of preparing for the coaching podcast and the comparisons of the rugby cultures there, we there was one thing we really discussed and was really interesting was, I mean, I've played a little bit of rugby myself, and I've been involved in the sort of representative rugby growing up where you play your county and you play in the division for London and then England and that sort of thing. And I can just remember playing under fear the whole time. You know, you're just scared to make a mistake, scared to do anything wrong, scared to have any kind of misdemeanor, you know, down to how my tie was after the game, you know, making sure my tie and my blazer was right, and scared to miss a tackle, scared to drop the ball, you know, just like living under this constant pressure and constant fear of, am I going to be dropped? Am I good enough? Am I going to do that? And then I sit and listen to you and listen to the culture you grew up in, and I sort of think, jealousy almost, and think, wouldn't it be nice to have just been there with someone come over and say, you know what, Phil, you're good. Go and enjoy it, go and play, and go and love the game and express yourself, which we don't have in English rugby. And you made the point off air there where you said that is that the difference between the Englanders typically never had good attack but solid defence, and does having that fear and that structure and that hierarchy, we would lay our bodies on the line, we'd work hard, but we were frightened to express ourselves. Where you guys, it's not because New Zealand have ever had a bad defence, but typically you're more renowned for the way you attack and be allowed to express yourself. So we'd sort of, does the problems lie from in English rugby and the lack of attack? Do the problems lie in the fact that the way we're brought up through the game with that sort of very sort of hierarchical structure of fear and iron fist driven? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's discussed a lot. It's in the media a lot, I guess, around why the All Blacks are so successful, why their attack is and why the like the Super 15 and all those sort of teams that filter down from the international part of the Southern Hemisphere teams. There's different arguments, like they play touch rugby when they're younger, so does that mean when they, you know, are a prop or a loose forward like you were in your rugby days, they had offloading skills and ability to have better passing skills because of what they did when they were younger? Or is it just that environment that they create where they're allowed to have a go and they're not punished for dropping a ball when they try and they're encouraged to have another go until they get it right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the classic. I mean, we would always have that. You drop a ball in training, you just take, you don't have to do it in front of everyone, you just take yourself over to the side, you do three press ups or three sit ups or whatever it was in that day, and then you go back into the group, and it's just that little punishment to say, hey, do that. Where perhaps you guys drop a ball and your teammate comes over and gives you a sort of smack on the backside, says, come on buddy, we can do it right again next time, eh? And living in and working in that environment. I think there's a fine line, isn't there? Because my instant argument to the press up, it's a philosophical rugby question, is do you punish them for a mistake or do you encourage them with a mistake? And I think the two sides of it are, at some point, you know, at the end of the game, the team with the most points has won the game. Someone wins and someone loses, and athletes need to know how to lose and need to know how to fail and how to get it wrong, because otherwise they don't learn. And so in that respect, admitting a mistake or having some kind of recognition for a mistake is a good thing, because it means we're open to improvement. But on the same token, do we need to then be punishing people all the time for making a mistake? And it sounds very simple that we're laying all of the all of the New Zealand versus England problems and rugby culture on press ups if we drop a ball. But it's a very good example of the different cultures in the sport.
I think with the push out, we've talked. Well, I think a lot about the biomechanics of a push up for the benefit of touch rugby or a rugby union or rugby league or whatever the sport is that we're playing. And I've thought a lot, what could the punishment be? Something a little bit closer to the sport and benefit your technique of the sport. But when you get down to the reason why you have the punishment and you ignore what the actual punishment is.
Yeah, exactly.
When we play a team sport and you might not win or lose depending on what you do.
No.
It might be depending on what someone else does.
Yeah.
Then if you're punished as a team, and this could be the same, not just in rugby, but cycling, you cycle as a team.
Yeah.
Cricket, you play as a team, yeah. And you could do outstanding as an individual and still lose.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess the push-up concept that we do in our training is your pass might be perfect, and the other person catching the ball might just take their eyes off the ball and drop the ball.
Yeah.
And they might not do it, you know, they might not have done it all year, but they might just drop the ball at that time.
Moment,
and
yeah.
As a team, you have to do the push-ups.
Yeah.
I think as a sort of society and a culture, that creates a good culture in a way.
Yeah.
Because you work together and you know that if you drop the ball, then everyone in the team's going to be doing the push-ups. You're doing it together. You're not on your own. You're not sort of a...
Isolated. Out. Yeah, exactly.
So in some ways it creates a good environment, good culture.
Yeah, but it's done in the right way and been communicated in the right way. But I think that's it. And I think, I mean, I'm happy to lay the burden of England's attack problems at the culture of, and it's interesting. I mean, I mean, I'm a big Saracens fan, as you know, and played there as a kid. And Eddie Jones was someone who was at Saracens who did a great job and laid a lot of the foundations for where we are now, to be honest. And liked the guy a lot, but was very, very against an Australian taking over the English rugby team. Wouldn't matter who it was, you know. There's few Australians in the world who I like, of course. Australian coaching England rugby, and I still haven't come around to it, still haven't accepted it. But what we have to say is he's brought in that culture that we're talking about. He's brought in that guy and have some, like, he's just said, look, does this need to be so serious? Does it need to be so intense? Can't we have a bit of fun with this? Can't we just, we get to do what we love doing every single day. Can't we just go out and have some fun instead of the stiff collar and the and you can see the difference in the way the guys are playing. They're out winning. They're about to sort of overtake the Kiwi record for test wins, and we're there. We're doing really well. And is it as simple as that? Is it just simple as a culture shift that the coaches out in the clubs and the coaches out in the kids and everything else go away from this sort of punishmental way of coaching and into this encouragement and into this sort of go out and express yourself and have some fun? And I think it's very easy to do it at grassroots. It's very easy to take the beginners and those guys there. Where it becomes tough is the sort of half good coaches. So, the dad who's just helping his kids, he knows he's not really a rugby coach. He's been on the level one or level two course and he's just helping and everyone's great and everyone's fantastic and the kids have fun. And the guys at the top end, they're clever enough to begin appreciating. It's the coaches there in the middle that aren't quite elite coaches yet and they're not quite beginner coaches yet, and they tend to be there where they rule a little bit more with the iron fist, especially in the English sort of counties and system there. It's very iron fist, regimental, and people playing under fear and training under fear of mistakes all the time. I think there's a lot to learn from our Australian friend who's taken over the England rugby team there in terms of coaching, encouragement and pushing people to perform and express themselves. You're a fly half, and it must be. I mean, have you played? You've played a little bit in England as well, so you've seen the
oh, yeah, I've played in both sort of styles. Yeah, and I definitely favour the more fearless, able to have a go style of play than the more structured, rigid, ridiculed for going away from a very rigid structure.
So
I definitely favour the more Southern Hemisphere style. Yeah. But when you look at England now, they're definitely going towards that style.
Yeah.
But there's other teams that are doing quite well at the moment with similar structure. The Liverpool football team.
Yeah.
Their managers created from the outside what looks like a very enjoyable sort of happy environment.
I think perhaps a better example of that would be the Tottenham team.
I don't know much about Tottenham. Sorry, Phil. Are they in the Champions League? Okay.
Yeah. Moving on, shall we, buddy? It's been a hard week for Spurs fans this week, but yeah, absolutely. That modern, and I think if going on that note, if you look at Mourinho, who was cutting edge, front of his field. Mm-hmm. Leading in terms of when he went to Chelsea and could carry that to Inter Milan and started to drop a little bit of Real Madrid, but still did very well. And the football world has just overtaken him. And there's a new world, there's new systems, there's new styles, they're part, and he's still stuck in that. And all the other players are sitting there looking at Liverpool, looking at Spurs, even Chelsea to a certain extent, and saying, I mean, they're all out enjoying their football and winning. Man City, they're all out having fun, enjoying it and expressing themselves. And we've just been shouted at, and we have this angry manager that coming in every day that's still in the old school. And it's funny to say it when, 15 years ago, Jose Mourinho was like the sports science and everything else was the leading. And now he's just like an old man who isn't following. And you can see the results are coming from it. And the guys, they talk to each other, of course, in the professional football world. They see what the other clubs are doing. And you can't,
I was watching last year, Leicester City had this remarkable year.
Yeah.
Across any sport, it's quite remarkable in the history of sport. And I'm not a big football fan. I don't know a lot about football. It's not something that's that I focus on a lot. But I was watching them. They arrived at the stadium at Manchester City, and they were playing against Manchester City. It was probably 6 or 8 weeks to go in the year. They needed to win or at least draw to keep going towards the title. And you'd think they're under all this pressure, and it must be like stressful and a weight on their shoulders and that sort of thing. And they turn up to the stadium, and the manager gets off the bus, and he shakes all the security guards' hands who are there opening the gates and that sort of thing. The players all get off the bus; they're all laughing and totally relaxed. I think Vardy is one of the strikers, so him and the manager go onto the pitch. They just walk out. The stadium's empty. They just walk out the stadium to have a look around, and they give each other a high ten and a hug when they're as they walk onto the stadium.
Yeah.
He's just got an environment where they're happy and able to express themselves and have fun. Playing the sport.
I mean, you've got a good example about the New Zealand rugby team cleaning the changing rooms, haven't you?
Yeah, and actually the Australian rugby league team have just brought the same thing into their culture. So at the end of as every rugby player knows, at the end of probably with football as well, at the end of a game, you're in the changing room. You got change, and there's mud everywhere because everyone's got mud on their boots. So you've gone into this nice, clean environment, and you've turned it into a complete mess.
It's a rugby dressing room at the end of a game is a total mess. Yeah,
there's stretching tape everywhere. It's a mess. So you know, and if at the end of a game, you could just leave that for someone at the club to clean up, and if you're visiting someone else's club, just leave that to clean up. But one of the things that All Blacks created, I don't know how long this has been. In their
culture.
Environment and
yeah.
culture
yeah.
for but they and the leadership team sort of lead this, and they make sure that they clean up after themselves, and they stay around, they clean up the whole changing room, they leave it as it was when they entered. And that's something that a guy called Mel Meninga, quite a famous rugby league player, brought into the Australian rugby league team this year. And then you see all the little things that they do on the pitch are also, they make less mistakes, all the little fine details are taken care of, and the players take more pride in their performance and all that sort of stuff, because they're taking pride in the things off the field as well.
Yeah.
So I think it does translate to a more, I don't know, more professional or a better culture on the pitch.
I think that's right. I think if we analyse it and you look at what, going back to the England example of ruling and the punishment and the sort of fear, ruling with fear there, is the goal is the same thing, is to instill discipline and professionalism and drive in the athletes or in the teams there, and that's what the goal is. But there's just many ways to come about that goal, you know. And here you've got the empowerment of, okay, boys, we've made this mess. We're a group. We're a team. We're together. We'll clean it up together. It gives the same result as what the coaches who are banging the table, shouting and screaming, angry. I think you use a good example of angry coaches that are always shouting, always, you know, pointing fingers, always picking up on mistakes. They're going for the same thing. They want the same thing. They want their players to understand the importance of detail. They want the players to understand the importance of following the plan. They want them to understand the unity and the teamwork and battling and the fight and training hard and all of those sort of things that go with being an elite sportsman. But there's just many different ways to, you can lead from the front or you can lead from the back, you know, and that where I stand behind you and just shout at you, or I go up front and I lead you and I lead you into the fire, if you know what I mean. It's a huge difference. And I think you think about the legendary coaches across all sports that you read about or you can buy the books on or anything else, like, they're all guys that have sort of led from the front. They're all guys that don't mind getting their hands dirty themselves, that don't mind getting down on their hands and knees and cleaning the dressing room or doing whatever. And all the other coaches that are some the sort of little bit sort of stand behind them, you don't really hear so much about them. And some of them have been successful, you know, but still with that authoritarian method of coaching, which takes, for me, it takes a lot of the fun out of the sport. And I look back on my rugby days, and I have my club mates, and all I think about when I have my club mates playing in my club was just how much fun we had. Like, best bunch of blokes ever. We loved each other. We never lost. We were, maybe some of them listening won't be too pleased with saying, we weren't particularly good, actually, but we were hard, we were tough, and we would die for each other, and we never lost. You know, we would win most games by small margins because no one scored against us, because we just had that fight, but we would fight for each other. And you always used to dread going up and playing county rugby or divisional rugby or national rugby, because you go from this fun environment where everybody's mates to this like fear of failure, fear of making a mistake and everything else. And I've got a clear division of what rugby is in my head, and played played a little bit at some premiership clubs in sort of 2000-2001, and that same fear came into the coaching there. And then I had an injury and dropped down like four divisions and played National 3 rugby, and they all went in the bar and had a beer after, and they talked to each other, and all the spectators with their dogs came over in their barber jackets and said, well played today. And it was when I found rugby. That was when I found like the sport, and like, this is what it's all about. This is great. This is like what the game is about. Like, just loving it and being a part of it. And you can see the New Zealand and Saracens and Eddie Jones, that's what they're bringing in. They're bringing in what is rugby, what is the sport. And I know we're talking about rugby, but this transfers to every sport and every method of coaching. Just
every coaching environment. I think when you look at Eddie Jones, he's come into a team with England who they're all very professional. They've been in many different professional environments in their club sides and that sort of thing. And they've probably been under a few different coaching structures for England. But he's not going to lose all of the sort of fear factor, but it's the way that he gets the fear factor across. So he's allowing them to express themselves more by the looks of it from the outside in.
Yeah.
They're obviously playing more attacking rugby in a way as well, but they must respect him.
Yeah.
So what's he doing to earn their respect so that they do all the little things really well?
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to yell at them and push them and that
yeah.
sort of thing, and he can have a laugh with them, and he's got that balance.
Yeah, ultimately, exactly.
You were coaching some of the cyclists last night on the Wednesday evening training, and I was watching you go between the two different rooms. So some are doing a circuit, some are on the bike, and when you walk in and watch them on the bike, you don't have to say anything, you don't have to yell or anything like that, but because they respect you and respect the effort you put into their training, they're going to bike a little bit harder, bike a little bit faster, they're not going to like give up. Well, and you're just standing there, you haven't said anything, you haven't like looked at them or said they're doing anything wrong. They want to train harder for you. So what environment can a coach create without creating just constant fear to make a team play harder for them?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's that enjoyable. They create an enjoyable environment where yes, you go in and you work hard and you work harder than you ever have done before to be the best that you can be. But then you can relax and you can enjoy when you're not there, and there's not all the stress and pressure that some environments created, that maybe the England rugby team was like that previously.
Yeah. Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. It's that coming in where if you do it right and you've got the balance right and the guys know why they're there and what they're there for and what their core values are and the reason they're in the sport and the reason they're working so hard, the shouting and screaming and the stamping the feet and is not necessary. But it comes from some constructive discussion with the athletes and clear goal setting and clear... and when I say goal setting, I'm not necessarily talking about winning. I'm talking about goal setting of what do we want to get out of what we're doing? What is this for? Why are you here? What's the project for? What's the reason for it? And having them understand what this all part of, and also having it. It's not the end of the world. You know, we go out after the we have a good saying here: is either we win or we learn. You know, and that's it. You know, a lot of the time is that. Fear breeds fear, and the fear of losing is about the most toxic thing an athlete could ever have, is to fear losing, because when they fear losing, they can't win. And they go out there with the focus on, I can't lose today. And when you go out with that fear, you you can't express yourself.
New Zealand has a history at World Cups. I think we've won quite a few World Cups, but there's been quite a few where we were favourites and we lost.
Choked, yeah.
Lost badly.
Yeah.
And I think it comes down to the fear. Yeah. It's not a big country. There's only about 4 million people. But all of those people know about rugby. And so as a player playing for your country, not that I've played for the All Blacks, but watching it from the outside, if they know that they're representing their country and all the eyes are on them, and you know they're always expected to win, and always expected to win by a certain margin as well now, then that fear could be sort of, it could take over at key moments of games or in key stages of tournaments like the World Cup. So they've often gone between World Cups, winning, and then so that expectation is that they will win the World Cup, and they get to that point and the stress and fear takes over and they can't express themselves on the pitch as much, and they do things that they haven't done for the last 3 years at that time of World Cup. And I think one of the things that the All Blacks brought in to try and take away all the pressure and eyes being on them, being like, let's say, world number one, all the pressure of their nation and that sort of thing, is Steve Hansen talks about it in a lot of his press interviews, is trying to take rugby forward.
Yeah.
So instead of all the pressure being on them and the fear of losing, it's like, how do they improve?
Yeah.
And they can make a better product of rugby. How can they make rugby more enjoyable for a child to watch?
Yeah.
How can they get more people interested in rugby? So if they play with a certain style and they play with certain flair and they have good disciplines and they allow their players to enjoy themselves, and maybe kids watching will think, I want to be an All Black because they look like they're having great fun. Yes, they're winning, but they're having a great time doing it. So as it
doing it for something bigger than yourself,
bigger than
more
bigger
important
yourself.
Than yourself, and
bigger than just your country, I guess.
Yeah, and understanding your role in that, and taking your own ego out of it, and not thinking the world revolves around me as the athlete, but the world revolves around. Someone said to me recently, which was a great thing, was have respect for the people you're competing against, because if they weren't there wouldn't be a race. And it's a really stupid thing, but it's a really clever thing, is that you never think about that, is that without the other people you're racing against, you'd be on your own, and then there was no race. So without them, you can't win. so it's just like, how enjoy that they're there, because if they're not there, we have a problem. I think one of my all-time favourite athletes is an Ironman athlete called Chrissy Weddington, who was very good, very, very, very good. And in her book, fantastic book, she writes very much about doing and racing and having that motivation of something bigger than herself. And I think if you sit down and you talk to athletes, especially when they've retired, maybe myself, I can look back at myself as just this young idiot who the only thing that was important was myself at that time. But when you get older and you get kids and families and stuff, then you start to really, really see, and I often say, if I could take, sport would be so much better if it was played by people from 40 to 60. You know, if your good years, if your body just came good at 40, and you could have sport being played by the life experience and the knowledge you have when you're 40 years old, sport would be wonderful, because it would be so tactically beautiful. Problem is, the body stops working around 30, and as we know, the body stops working and they can't do that. But it is just being able to have that reflective nature in your coaching and in your team or in your athletes, and how do we get that over to these young guys, how do we get that over to myself, 15, 16, 17 years, all I think about is, how many kilos do I squat, how many kilos do I bench press, how many tackles did I make, and I'm running around like headless chicken, and I'm missing the point, you know, and I actually have to lose my dream of being a professional rugby player and go down and play in the lower divisions before I find out what the game's all about. You know, and if I could have just, someone could just explain to me, or if I was clever enough to listen to that at that time, that we do this for more than just ourselves. You know, we do this because we love sport and we love the game. It would be a lot better. And some coaches, they can get that information over to their teams, and they're the successful teams. You know, we look at the, and this is applicable to business. We talk a lot about rugby. We're rugby boys, but this is applicable to all sports. It's applicable to how you run your business and how you motivate your people that work for you within your business, if you're a manager. It's the same thing. and it's leadership and management, which is which way do you want to do it? You know, which way do you want to lead?
So I think there's obviously a few of these managers of sports teams or coaches of sports teams who have talked about it. They must have their techniques to get the balance right. And some of them, it is just a balance, because you can't just come in and have especially a professional sport where the pressure is there to win and you have to succeed, where it can all just be relaxed and easy and that sort of
thing. Yeah, there's that balance, isn't there? Yeah.
So the players have to learn from other senior players and the management of what's needed to work hard and what it's like to be a professional athlete and what's needed to win. What does working hard mean, to work more hard than the people that you're competing against?
Yeah.
And if you've done something in your training and you've done something in your season that's harder than the opposition, how do you know that's going to carry you through, you know, when time gets tough? And some coaches will create that through fear and pressure, and some of them will create it through getting the involvement of the team and leading the way themselves and that aspect. So coming up with techniques and systems and values and that sort of thing, and having the team buy into that or come up with it themselves and lead that forward.
I think the key thing is also experiences together. It's what they experience together.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we create experiences that they have to overcome themselves? And the worst thing that can happen for a team is to lose. You know, that's the best opportunity you have for them to experience something together, and how you manage that loss is very, very important. You know, because losing, you know, you can go team building, you can do team building things, they experience something together. You know, some of the rugby, they go to, I know Saracen some years ago, they went to Oktoberfest, they flew over to Munich, and they just had one giant drink up together. But they experienced something together and creating memories together and creating those bonds, and also in the workplace if you wanted to transfer it to business there. And that is it, but a lot of the time we miss the opportunity, going back to the press-up example right at the start, the opportunity for them to experience something together is in a mistake there in training. How do we come together and pick that up? How do we fix that problem? And the short-term solution for me as the coach is to say, don't do that again, you need to do this and this, and you need to have your hands here, you need to do this and this, and you need to do that. The long-term solution, which takes a little bit longer to build a team, is what went wrong, guys? Figure that out, talk together, experience it, and what do you think we should do? And one idiot always says, I think we should do 20 press-ups. Yeah, okay, go on then, boys, down you get. And then, but that creates an experience, and I think trying to create experiences for the guys, going away with them, putting them in extreme environments in training. I'm not averse to them working hard. Well, hard work is part of it. Cleaning the changing room, all of these examples of doing the small basic things well together creates those experiences and creates that environment where we can thrive and we can go forward. And ultimately, when they start to feel good, they start to play well. And when they start to play well, that respect you talked about for the coach comes because they feel good. You know, and you usually respect people that make you feel good. You know, you usually like people that make you feel good. And I think if you look over at the coach and your teammate, and the coach works as hard as the teammate works, and the teammate works as hard as your other teammate, then you start to just get that environment where we're all on the same level. There's just one of us that has to be in charge. There's one of us that has to make the decisions here, and that's me. But I'm not above you. I'm not below you. But we're part of it together, and we experience this together. We develop together, and I make mistakes as a coach. You make mistakes as an athlete, but together we made the mistake. You know, I think that's where it comes from. I think that's where the empowerment comes from. Is that we're on the same level. There's just one of us that has to make the decisions.
I think also, every time there's, you know, every team that's pushing the boundaries is going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
So every time you're trying to improve, you're going to make mistakes. And that, you know, the whole fear of failure and trying to remove that and just get used to making mistakes, but learning from them, making sure you correct them each time and get better and better as you go, I guess is the key. But if someone makes a mistake, as a coach coming in, what you have to, obviously they have to know. If they didn't realize there was a mistake made, we need to go review and see why it happened and that sort of thing. But some coaches would get that balance right,
yeah,
and analyzing that mistake,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
and learning from it and moving forward and trying to ensure that same mistake and that same situation wouldn't happen again, and how that we can learn from that for other situations as well. And some coaches wouldn't necessarily visit it at all, and then the same mistake could happen.
Yeah.
So getting the balance right of not being over analytical of a,
yeah,
of a failure or
absolutely
something that went wrong, and but making sure that we learn from it and we understand why it happened and what we can do to ensure it doesn't happen in the future.
Yeah.
So as a coach, it's always trying to get those balances right and seeing where your athletes are at.
Yeah.
I think if you know if the athletes made a few mistakes and they're sort of down and you know they've gone through a tough period of training or a tough few games, then it's probably not the right time to come in and rip them to pieces over
no.
it.
No.
And maybe some encouragement at that stage is needed, and vice versa, if they're riding a bit of a high and they're winning and they don't think there's anything wrong with them, maybe that's when they need the biggest sort of kick.
There's 2 points there, buddy, and yeah, first one is the best time to get a point over to your team is after they've won. You know, that's the best time to say, all right, guys, you know, well done, you're good, but what about this, what about that, what about that? It's very easy to be critical of someone who, if you need to be critical of them or have a point over, get a point over to them, it's very easy to do that when they're feeling good and high. You know, when they're sitting down in a negative slump, telling them they're bad, it doesn't help anything. It doesn't make the problem worse because they don't listen. Because they can't, you know, when something's hurting, you don't listen to other things anyway. So there, I think, but I mean, we sit here and we're talking a lot about empowerment, encouragement, driving people forward, being good, positive coaches. And at the same time, we're sitting here talking about mistakes and failure and losing, and we want to win all the time. And there's where the issue is, isn't it? Is that you and I were sitting and we're saying, there's no one who wants to win more than you and I. We're winners, you know, and our athletes, it's expected they win. And none of us are more critical than you and I, and pick on detail and look at detail and analyze detail. And none of us hate losing more than you and I. Yeah, at the same time, over the other side of the table, we're saying, yeah, we can't focus on the negatives. We can't. We have to empower. We have to encourage. And what we're not saying is that you should come away from all of that. You still have to be analytical. You still have to be critical. You still have to be driven. You still have to want to win. You still have to do. There's just different ways of doing that. And there's a balance in doing that with the athletes. And the skill and the art of coaching is being able to have all of those very controlling, hard things, and communicate them and apply them in an environment of empowerment where the athlete and everyone else is having a good time and enjoying it. And if you can do that, you're successful. If you can do that, you're a good coach. And if you can't do that, it's probably why you're not winning. And you know, football teams, they change the manager and the next game they've just lost 6-7 in a row, and then the next game they win 4-0. Because the guys come in and go, oh, actually, life's not so tough. Yeah, he's a good guy. Let's go out and just do something, you know. And sometimes it doesn't need to be as complicated and as and when do I pile the analytical pressure on them? When do I say, just go out and just go kick a football, or go and throw a rugby, or go and ride your bike? Or there's a huge balance in the analytical negative, not negative, but analytical can be very negative side, and the empowerment side. There's a very fine balance as a coach there, which a lot of people, and we get wrong, of course, but we do have, we're aware of it. And I think the first step for coaches, if they're listening, for example, thinking, okay, what do I do? The first step is just to be aware of it. Think about, how am I communicating now? Am I communicating in a way that actually helps? Am I making my point in a way that actually helps? Because just telling someone they're doing something wrong, it doesn't help. It's not good. And am I ruling with fear? Thinking the whole time, I'm always thinking, am I ruling with fear? Am I ruling with encouragement? And just being aware of that will always already make you a better coach.
I think there's lots of little techniques that people use. So if someone's had a tough race or a tough game, criticizing them in the changing room straight after is probably not the right sort of environment for most players. or athletes after a race, but like after a cycling race, you might, rather than analyzing the race afterwards in your normal coaching environment and your normal training center that you use, maybe you just go down to have dinner or have a coffee or go an environment where you're creating a lighter environment where it's a bit more relaxed and you're not in your normal training kit and that kind of thing, and you can just go have a nice easy chat. And that's probably where you get more information, and letting the athlete do a lot of the talking as well, and guiding them rather than a strong sort of dictatorial environment there, you can often get a better response from an athlete. And on the flip side, when everything's sort of going well and they're happy and things, sometimes that's the time where you can try and take the step further ahead by sort of ripping in a little bit more
pushing
and giving pushing
harder,
in a little bit harder.
Exactly.
We talked off air earlier on about the All Blacks a couple of years ago were winning, and I think it was one of these sort of record journeys that they were going on, and they had to travel from New Zealand to South Africa, which is quite a long journey. It's quite a few hours on a plane, and when you're winning like that, and if you could have an excuse, oh, we had to do all this travel, we played all these games, it was the end of a season or end of a really tough championship, we'd already won the championship, and this game didn't really affect whether you won that or not, and you had all these excuses and reasons why you wouldn't win. And Richie McCaw at 5:30 in the morning got all the players up and made them go out and for a run, and they made them get up for breakfast earlier, and he totally flipped everything on its head, rather than letting them sleep in a little bit more and letting them relax as a senior player and captain. He got the guys up earlier and said it's all just mental, the travel side of it, and you know, we're going to do whatever it takes to win this game. This is just
ready,
as important, and and to be ready to play. And there, because of that aspect, there were no excuses. So getting the right balance, depending where your athlete is at, creating the right environment, whether that means leave your training center or or whatever. I think thinking outside the box and
timing,
trying to be creative, for the best environment for that athlete.
Because there is that misconception, isn't there, that that the way the methodology we're talking about with coaching now, a lot of coaches will be listening saying, you know, it's a load of rubbish, you know, they just need to get out and smash themselves, work hard and do their due diligence and do the miles and everything else like that. And I don't think they should misunderstand us. They're welcome to see some of our training programs. The guys are working hard. We they're doing the 5 in the mornings, they're getting up, they're doing their work. It just doesn't need to be under the barrier of fear. It can just be under the barrier of, this is, I love this is my sport, and I'm privileged to be able to do it.
They have the buy-in to know that this is what's required for them to do well in their
sport, exactly,
to achieve their goals.
Exactly. Good. So, are we playing you guys soon?
No, not for a while.
No.
I think that's why you were talking about the winning run, because you didn't actually play the All Blacks for a while. And since you didn't make the quarterfinals of the World Cup, I think you've won nearly every game since.
Yep, we have, mate.
So, doing well. It's a good year.
So that'll be good. We'll have to do another podcast just up to the next England-New Zealand game. Could be perfect timing. The next time we play, you will beat your record.
We can talk about the coaching philosophies leading into it.
Yeah.
And what reaction they're getting from their team at the time.
Yeah, good. Thanks for joining us, Simon. It's good to have you here. Nice
Thanks
to see
for having
you.
Me. It's great.
As always, any questions or anything else we can help with, just write into us. Have a good day.